Tom Woods Show, episode 1949.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, the Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, don't even think about missing the libertarian event of the year, the 2000th episode of the Tom Woods Show, live in Orlando, featuring many of your favorites from the Tom Woods Show. And Michael Malice says his special surprise guest, whose identity I myself don't even know, will bring the house down. Cost nothing to attend. Register at tomwoods2000.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I am so happy to have Mark Sisson back on the show. I think it's been years since we've had Mark on, and I'm so glad to be doing that. Mark is the brains behind the Primal Blueprint, which I've been talking about for a long time. I haven't always been faithful to it. You know, I should have been, and I intend to be more faithful to it in the future. But it's an approach to health that does indeed involve food, but also exercise and sleep and various other parts of your life that all work together to create the best possible you. And I've had such good results with it. So I want to talk to Mark about this kind of stuff. I also want to get his thoughts on COVID and what we can do to be in good health, to have a good immune system at a time like this. So anyway, I'm so excited to have Mark Sisson back. Mark, welcome back.
Tom, so great to be back after all this time.
You know, I forget how many years ago it was, 9 or 10, I was filling in on the Peter Schiff show and I had you on to talk about the Primal Blueprint. And for years afterward, people would write to me and say that that one episode changed their lives. So now here we are all these years later. Let's see if we can do a repeat of that. I have to ask you, it's a formality. I've got to ask you at the beginning of any episode with you, by now I'm sure you've got this down to an absolute science, but I have to ask you what the Primal Blueprint is. I mean, how else can I start this, Mark?
No, that's great. I mean, for people who don't know, the Primal Blueprint was my analysis after years and years of research into human health, human behavior, genetics, genetic science, evolution, anthropology. It was my stripped down analysis of the basic rules of being a healthy, happy, productive human. Some of it was diet, some of it was based on sleep, some of it was based on sun exposure and play and working out. But I put these sort of guidelines for living a healthy life together in a book that I originally called The Primal Blueprint. And it was basically 10 of these laws, if you will.
All right. Now, as you say, it's not just food, but a big chunk of it is food. So I do have a few things I want to ask you related to food. And one of them in particular has to do with something that's become quite popular since the last time you and I spoke. And that is this carnivore diet. What's your opinion about that?
Well, it's very interesting because as has happened in the health field over the past decade or two, there has been an evolution around ways of eating. For instance, recognizing 15 or 20 years ago that not all fats are bad. In fact, some fats are good for you. And not all carbs are good. Some carbs are bad for you. So there's been a real sort of parsing of the dietary guidelines, if you will, and certainly a reanalysis of the food pyramid. And over the years, paleo became primal. Primal became, high-end primal became keto, which was basically no carbs. Keto then sort of led to a movement, which you just described as a carnivore diet, the carnivore movement. And I have to say, I'm a big fan of it. I'm a big fan of the carnivore movement. I have a lot of friends who are doing it. I have some very well-educated medical doctors who have been engaged in this for their own lifestyle and now espousing it to others around them. And there is a great deal of research behind this and a great deal of science that would back up some of the claims that are being made by people who are into this carnivore way of eating.
But does carnivore mean that you have to eat meat exclusively? Because I've heard some people say that.
No, you don't have to eat exclusively meat. There are a lot of people who continue to do that, but that's not a requirement of, labeling yourself a carnivore. So a lot of the carnivores would look to, again, evolution, anthropology, ancestral ways of eating, and suggest that food largely should be consist of meat, but that also fruits, which are by nature inviting to the human palate. They're sweet, would also maybe be included in a carnivore diet. But what might not be included would be vegetables that are bitter, that don't really taste great unless they're, you know, they're cooked and they're you have to salt them and butter them and things like that. So some of the carnivores that I know are supplementing, if you will, their diets with fruit, with honey, with things that are natural like that, but they're still keeping away from any processed foods, any grains of any kind. And a lot of them are staying away from most vegetables because I think the theory among that group is that vegetables really don't want to be eaten. Vegetables make these toxins that make them unappealing to humans and to other animals that are omnivorous. But fruits, on the other hand, want to be eaten. That's why they're sweet. And that's why we have developed a palate and a taste for fruits. They want to be eaten because fruits want us to consume their seeds and then disperse them through our poop, you know, around the world. So it's really interesting. If you look at any of these diets through the lens of evolution and human biology, pretty interesting what you can come up with.
I remember you saying something like this when you were trying to describe to people under the primal blueprint the sorts of things that you could eat. Now, what I like about it, for one thing, is I am a cheese eater, and I can get away with that as somebody who's primal and not feel bad. But you were basically saying something like this, that you can eat meat, fish, fowl, vegetables, fruits, nuts, and seeds, and maybe one or two other categories of things. And you can pretty much eat as much of that as you want until you're full, and you're going to be fine. You're going to be in good health. You can be in the kind of shape you want to be. And that's really an amazing thing, that when I first jumped on board this, I had amazing results right away. And at no time was I counting calories. At no time was I adding up figures and using a calculator. That never occurred to me. I just ate until I was full. But yet what I don't understand, Mark, is why is that? Because isn't it in fact a numbers game? I mean, you burn more than you put in, you lose weight. I mean, why didn't I have to count the calories? To this day, I don't get that.
Well, you didn't have to count the calories because you got a handle on hunger, appetite, and cravings. Most people who don't eat this way and don't eat primally or paleo or keto or ancestral or any of the ways that we're talking about, most people who eat what we call the standard American diet have lost control of appetite and cravings, partly as a result of the predominance of processed carbohydrates in their diet. And processed carbohydrates, these would be, you know, sugars, added sugars, sweetened beverages, pies, cakes, candies, cookies, but also breads, pasta, cereal, anything that turns into glucose in the bloodstream. With the introduction of these into the gut, they cause a rise in insulin, and insulin then tries to take the glucose out of the bloodstream and store it in muscles and store it in fat. And after it's done its job, you become hungry again. So you get this roller coaster of appetite because of the choices of foods that you've been consuming. When you get rid of those offending ingredients, the sugars, the processed grains, and in many cases, seed oils, which we can talk about, you come down to that list of meat, fish, fowl, eggs, nuts, seeds, vegetables, a little bit of fruit. The body self-regulates. The body says, this is what I was designed to consume over hundreds of thousands, millions of years of evolution. This is what my genes expect of me. And therefore, my appetite system does not get out of whack. And you made an interesting comment, Tom. You said you eat till you're full. I would suggest that people eat until they're no longer hungry. I think it's a semantic thing. Obviously, you probably meant that. But when you eat till you're full, then sometimes that's too much for some people.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Eating until you literally have the recognition like, all right, I just had 6 bites of steak and I've got a whole half a steak left on my plate, but I'm just not hungry for it. I could finish it. I could, you know, I could be a good citizen and eat all that's on my plate. But no, I think I'll just push it aside and save it for later or whatever. So the ability to recognize when you don't need the next bite, when you're no longer hungry for the next bite, is probably the most essential skill that you can develop from this way of eating. And the subsequent books I've written over the past 12 years, many of them have been on keto. I have the Keto Reset Diet, and I have a book called Keto for Life. And now my most recent book is called 2 Meals a Day. With the recognition that most of us just eat too damn much food. We just eat too much food. And sure, some of us can get away with it without packing on the pounds, But even those of us who can get away with it, myself included, who don't pack on the pounds, I still was eating too much food and it was not good for my health. And so I developed a strategy that basically said, if I can retrain my body to derive most of its energy from the stored body fat that's on me and not have to look to another meal every 2 or 3 hours to keep my energy levels up, wouldn't that be a great thing? Wouldn't that free me up to have more time to do things? And so the 2 meals a day strategy evolved from that, where you go for 16, 17 hours a day without eating. And then you have a compressed eating window. So my first meal, for example, would be a lunch at, say, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. That's my first meal of the day. And then I might have a dinner. So I have lunch and a dinner. That's 2 meals. I work out in the morning, fasted. I don't eat breakfast. I work out fasted. I have amazing workouts. I wake up, I don't feel hungry. And one of the other strategies, if you're not hungry, then don't eat. There is no need to eat if you're not hungry. So kind of let hunger, be your guidepost there. And think that to yourself, every meal that I don't eat is a meal that my body is deriving, or is a span of time that my body is deriving 500 calories from my own stored body fat. It's burning off my stored body fat and it's using it for the fuel that it was intended to be. And isn't that a cool thing? Now, when we talk about this, you have to recognize that people say, wait a minute, I couldn't go that long without eating. Well, you can if you're not hungry. Hunger is the thing that destroys everyone's diet, everyone's way of eating. Hunger is the thing that derails everyone. So if you can corral this whole thing about hunger and train your body to be fine not eating and not even notice that you skipped a meal, like, oh my God, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I forgot to eat lunch. Oh, well, who cares? My body didn't care. My body was very well-trained and adept at taking the body fat off my hips, my belly, my thighs, my butt, and using it as fuel to get me through the day. And I wasn't hungry. Like, how cool is that, Tom?
Well, first, there's so much to unpack here. For one thing, I had always been told that not to work out on an empty stomach. And you're saying there's no particular need to be worried about that?
Not only is there not a need to be worried about that. See, again, this is more like a 3-hour show.
But by the way, I'm sorry to interrupt because you are trying to teach me something, but I can't tell you how many times I've headed over to the gym trying to wolf something down so as not to violate this principle.
No, and the principle was what it was for 20 years. It was the mantra. Don't go more than 2 hours without eating some form of protein or carbohydrate. Or if you go to the gym and you work out, you will cannibalize your muscle tissue, right? You'll do all the things that you think you don't want to have happen. And that has been proven to be such a falsehood over the years. So every workout I do, I'm fasting. Now, what I know is happening is, first of all, I know that my body has stored enough glycogen in my muscles. Whether or not I ate any carbohydrates in the prior 24 or 36 hours, I still have glycogen in my muscles. And glycogen is the fuel that the muscles will use in a heavy, hard workout. So I don't need to be slamming down some pre-workout meal 20 minutes before my workout to have the fuel I need to get through the workout. That just doesn't make any sense if you really think about it. Like, why, if an animal was going to go out hunting, why would it need to eat what it was going to catch first and then go catch it, right?
Yeah.
So now, the other thing about working out fasted for me is I also don't eat for another 2 hours at least after I work out, because that's when my body is using the strategy of the workout. If it was, say, in the gym, if the workout was in the gym, I'm creating a pulse of testosterone and growth hormone from the workout. The body's responding to the hard work by creating a pulse of testosterone and growth hormone. And that's what builds muscle. Now, ironically, if I go home and consume a high carbohydrate meal right after that workout, the carbs in that meal will elevate my insulin, and insulin shuts off growth hormone and testosterone. So in the old days of the gym, you would say, well, I'm going to go home. I'm going to eat my post-workout meal. I'm going to fuel up because I'm going back to the gym again tomorrow. And so I want to have the glycogen in my muscles. I want to be able to do the work again tomorrow. And so every endurance athlete that I knew, carbo-loaded every day because they trained hard every day. Well, there's a method to that madness, but it also requires that you train hard every day. And I don't train to train hard, Tom. I train to get stronger. I train to build my muscles. And so I don't want to be doing the same thing every day. So now back to my strategy. So when I finish a workout on a Monday, let's say, and I don't eat for a couple of hours, I know that the workout has created a pulse of testosterone and growth hormone, and I'm repairing muscles. I'm not going to be consuming some post-workout drink or meal that's going to blunt that response. And because I'm not going to train hard like that again for at least 48 hours, my body will recover fine. My glycogen stores will build themselves back regardless of how much carbohydrate I consume. So the idea in my way of thinking of a pre-workout meal or a post-workout meal has been sort of negated by the concept of creating this pulse of testosterone and growth hormone. And by the way, burning off more stored body fat the whole time. Because if you consume a meal before you go to the gym, that's what your body's going to burn. It's going to burn that meal. Well, when you go to the gym, Tom, don't you want your body to be burning off your stored body fat?
I always wondered that, Mark. It always seemed to make no sense to me.
Yeah. And it only came to sort of the forefront of the bodybuilder movement because bodybuilders are so afraid of losing muscle mass. They didn't want to cannibalize their muscle tissue. And they were afraid that because they were so based on a carbohydrate paradigm, they were not based in burning body fat and being good body fat burners. They were based in burning carbohydrate. So their fear was that if they didn't eat carbohydrate and they ran out of glycogen in their muscles, then the body would respond. The brain would say, uh-oh, no carbohydrate. We don't know how to burn fat. We haven't trained ourselves to burn ketones. We only know how to burn glycogen. Where are we going to get some? I know. We'll send cortisol to the muscles and strip the muscles of protein. We'll send some of those amino acids to the liver to become glucose. So that was sort of a loop system that became sort of this mantra for anyone who was so carbohydrate dependent that if they didn't eat, you know, if they went 5 or 6 hours without eating carbs, they would get lightheaded and woozy and they'd start to go into this cannibalistic mode. Once you become a good fat burning beast, as I like to say, that entire loop goes away. And once you become good at burning fat, your body always knows where to go. If you forego a meal, if you forget to eat a meal, if you choose not to eat for 2 days and you're on a fast, only good things happen. Nothing bad happens.
Okay. I love all this. I wasn't even planning to. I have so many other things I want to talk to you about. I'm going to try and get a couple of the key ones in here. Let's switch gears and talk about living in the age of COVID. Now, we're told, you know, if this hits you and you need to go to the hospital, they're going to give you this or that type of regimen. But what has been shocking to me is how little we've been told about what you can do to strengthen your body in case this should happen to you. Or if it does happen to you and you're at home, what are things you can do for your body that will accelerate your recovery? So as somebody who is extremely concerned with people's health, I assume you had the same thoughts during all this. No one's talking about what sorts of things can I be doing for my body to strengthen it to the point where I won't have to worry as much about this.
Well, that's exactly the point. So as I said, from day one, going back to February of 2020, this is not so much a public health issue as it's a personal health issue. It is an immune system issue. And if you have a strong immune system, if you have a competent immune system, COVID is not going to be the beast that it has been for so many people. So I got COVID over Thanksgiving and I was in an enclosed vehicle with someone for like an hour, you know, having a heated discussion, driving somewhere with the windows rolled up. And then I found out the next day that they tested positive. And for me, it literally was like the mildest summer cold I've ever had. So it was a non-event for me. And I would suggest that the reason, I had several reasons. Number one, I've been training for this my whole life. So I have a very robust, strong immune system. And that's one of the things that, you know, got me through this. Second of all, vitamin D levels, probably the single greatest predictor of your ability to withstand COVID-19 is your vitamin D levels. And anyone can get those tested through a blood test at your doctor. And if your vitamin D levels are, say, above 40, you are basically immune to COVID. And if you're not immune to COVID, your symptoms will be mild at worst. And so it blows my mind, Tom, that the response to COVID from the beginning was stay inside and wear a mask. When in fact, the best thing people could have done was go outside, breathe fresh air, get sunlight, get vitamin D exposure. Yeah, you know, certainly distance yourself from other people, but no one ever really talks about the viral load. And I think the viral load was a big issue. So being outside, even if you got exposed to little bits of the virus and you didn't get a big load because someone, you know, sneezed in your face, it was probably a good thing for you to be exposed to small amounts of it. The other thing was, as we know, you know, obesity was a big comorbidity, a comorbidity factor. A lot of the people who succumbed to COVID-19 or had really life-threatening bouts with it were either obese or had blood sugar issues. This is a virus that loves blood sugar, apparently. And then, of course, you know, older people who almost typically don't have strong immune systems. And that's the best example of what happens when you mismanage this event. And I would say, and I've said this again, I've been saying this for over a year, this is the most mismanaged event in human history. And it continues to be mismanaged, like bizarrely. So if I had been head of the CDC and telling people what they could do, I would have said, here's what you do to not get COVID or not be hit hard by this. Don't eat sugar. Reduce or eliminate all forms of sugar, artificial sugar, for the next 60 days. Get out and walk in the fresh air, you know, away from people. That's fine. 20 to 40 minutes every single day. Get some sunlight. Take supplemental vitamin D. Take zinc, because zinc was the big, I think, factor with people who had lingering COVID and lost their sense of taste and smell. That was really a factor of zinc deficiency more than anything else. This is a much more manageable disease, if you will, than it has been made out to be. And people have become so fearful of this when, in fact, there are actual strategies that you could employ that would dramatically reduce your risk of either getting it or having serious issues with it.
Have you had any pushback? You have a huge, huge audience, and a lot of people out there just believe what MSNBC tells them. Have you had any pushback for saying it's been badly handled?
So it depends on my audience. So I gather I won't have any pushback from your audience.
No, no way.
I did a Joe Rogan podcast a couple months ago. I wouldn't have any pushback from the Rogan show. So it depends on the platform. And to be honest, on Mark's Daily Apple, I haven't really gone on the record there as having this. But I'll go on record anywhere as saying my quote, the single quote I have about COVID, is the most mismanaged event in human history.
Yeah, and I don't see how that can be denied. Let me ask you a couple quick things, and then I'll let you go. You talked about muscle mass, and people are concerned they're going to lose muscle mass, and they think that if they follow the kinds of advice you give, it leads to loss of muscle mass. What kinds of things actually would lead to loss of muscle mass? Is that a concern?
Well, so back to the original premise here, which is that if you spent your whole life on a standard American diet, and you're somebody who has not trained your body to burn fat. And by that, I mean, you just haven't done the work to skip meals here and there and clean up your diet so that when you do skip a meal, your body has no choice but to resort to plan B, which is take fat out of storage, combust it in the muscle cells, make ketones, send those ketones to the brain. The brain loves ketones for fuel, prefers ketones over glucose. When you train your body to do that, then you always have a ready supply of energy. On the other hand, if you don't train your body to do that, which 95% of Americans apparently have not, and you continue to require a fresh supply of calories every 3 or 4 hours, most of which are coming from some form of carbohydrate, whether it's bread, rice, pasta, cereal, pies, cakes, candies, cookies, sugar, sweetened beverages, fruits, all the things that have sugar, when you create that sort of a system and the body gets used to it, then the body never has the opportunity to tap into your body fat supplies. And so when you do then find yourself skipping a meal or not eating for a few days, and you haven't trained your body to be good at burning fat or burning ketones, yes, then there is this possibility that you will cannibalize muscle tissue. We saw this on The Biggest Loser for season after season, where these people would cut their calories dramatically, still consuming carbohydrates, but cut their calories from, you know, 6,000, 8,000 calories a day down to 1,000 calories a day. Then Jillian would have them, you know, be burning off 6,000 calories a day. But because they hadn't trained themselves to be good at burning fat yet, and this takes 3 weeks of dedicated sort of reconfiguring of the diet, because they hadn't trained themselves to burn fat, all they did was burn muscle. It was horrible. So you saw people on The Biggest Loser who would lose 100 pounds and 80 of it would be water and 20 of it would be muscle mass and some of it would be fat. But so you'd see them lose 100 pounds and they'd get, you know, flabby and whatever. They'd lose the weight and it looked pretty good. But almost invariably, everyone who ever did The Biggest Loser gained back every pound they ever lost and then some because they cannibalized their muscle tissue, because they had not spent the time to configure their diet in a way that would encourage them to burn fat preferentially and not burn carbohydrates. And that is the essence of the Primal Blueprint. That is the essence of my book, The Keto Reset Diet. That is the essence of my book, Two Meals a Day. They're all different methods of getting at the same result, which is to treat your body to healthy fats, quality protein, and teach your body to burn off stored body fat.
Hey, folks, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, Skillshare. As I get older, I just turned 49. I keep thinking about all the years I spent as an incorrigible workaholic, how much better my life is now that I have a good balance, and how important it is to take the time to do things that bring you joy. And Skillshare has thousands of little manageable classes teaching you how to do all kinds of things that maybe you've just wanted to do. Maybe they're not connected to your employment. Maybe you're not going to build a business with them. They just bring you joy. There are so many fascinating classes on Skillshare on topics including illustration, design, photography, animation, productivity, and so much more. Over the years, I've had three of my daughters come on the show and talk about how much they've enjoyed Skillshare and how much it's enriched their own experiences with their own hobbies. Well, whether you're a dabbler or a pro, a hobbyist or a master, you're creative. That's why Skillshare has classes for every skill level. With short lessons, hands-on projects, and classes designed for real life, you can tap into the creativity we all have inside. Explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/woods, where our listeners get a one-month free trial of premium membership. That's 1 month free at Skillshare.com/woods. All right, let me summarize a little bit of my own experience here, because I like to eat at restaurants a lot, but I like fine dining. And with fine dining, you can very often, it's not that difficult to adapt what you're ordering. Because really fine dining restaurant is going to have really high quality ingredients and really good dishes. And you can adapt it to what you need to be on the Primal Blueprint. At the same time, I'm going to say something that might shock you, Mark. But I was told that, listen, after a while, you're going to lose your cravings for some of the things that you used to eat that weren't doing you any good. But Mark, I never did lose my cravings for the three P's, pizza, pasta, and pancakes. They never went away. And I know I can use almond flour if I want to spend all morning making pancakes. I just don't want to do that. So I did do the occasional cheat day where I just have a day where I just eat whatever I wanted. And it just didn't make a difference because I was doing so well on the other days that occasionally I could allow myself that indulgence. And I still did really well to the point where I made a YouTube video about where all the weight went. Everybody was curious to know that. The other thing is I want to make, you know, obviously if I'm doing this, I want to make meals that are in line with what I'm trying to do. And so I've used, you have cookbooks. I used your Primal Blueprint Quick and Easy Meals book, because a lot of the time I don't really want to spend an hour and a half in the kitchen, but I still want to do this. So I want to know the easiest way to do it. So I, marksdailyapple.com, your website has a ton of recipes that are great that I've been making for years. So you've got the resources out there for people who really, really want to dive into this. But because you've written so many books over the years, I want to know right now in 2021, where do you direct people for their first deep dive into this?
Wow. You know, the Primal Blueprint, which if you really want to get into this and understand the science behind it and understand all of the methods that I've used to literally write the next 10 books, the Primal Blueprint is the place to go. After that, I would say, then you'd go, that's my first book. And then my last book, Two Meals a Day, represents the synthesis of another 10 years of continuously looking into the science and figuring out how it is that I can get people to enjoy every single bite of food they ever eat and not feel guilty about it. And Tom, you described your experience with these cheat days and with the pizzas, the pasta, and what was the third P?
Pancakes.
The pancakes.
the worst one.
No, but what you described is what I call metabolic flexibility. And so I'm not telling people to be keto and stay keto all the time. I'm telling people the key to life is metabolic flexibility, the ability to derive energy from the stored body fat on your body or from the fat on your plate of food or from the carbohydrates in the pancakes or from the glycogen in your muscles or the glucose in your bloodstream or the ketones that your liver makes. If you are metabolically flexible, you get energy from all those things. And so on a day that you take what you call a cheat day, yes, you're good at burning fat those other 6 days, but on this cheat day, you're also very good at burning the carbohydrates, which you never lose. And the main thing is you don't feel horrible for eating on that cheat day. In other words, I hope you don't. In fact, I would say, you know, this really comes down to how do you feel rather than what's your blood work look like. It literally comes down to how do you feel. And if after 6 days of eating primarily keto and being very diligent about your diet and you feel great on the seventh day when you have a cheat day and you have that pizza, if you still feel good after eating the pizza, you win the prize, Tom. You get to have the best of both worlds. That's metabolic flexibility.
I love it. Well, I have fallen a bit off the wagon, but I am about to hop back on, which was actually why when I saw you on Twitter, I thought, you know, this is a sign from above that not only do I need to have Mark on, but I need to get back doing this. I just actually went over to Amazon and I looked at Primal Blueprint Quick and Easy Meals, and it says last purchased April 30th, 2012.
So, oh my goodness.
I've been around this thing for a while, thanks to you.
Yes,
you have. So I'm going to put on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/1949, the two books you mentioned, The Primal Blueprint and Two Meals a Day, and also put your website, marksdailyapple.com. And I remember we did an episode a long time ago where you told me the story about that site. And if I'm remembering this correctly, for about 2 years, you just put out content, and the response was kind of flat, but you just kept putting it out. And then it just absolutely exploded to the point where the Primal Blueprint is a phenomenon. I just love stories like that.
Yeah, thank you. And of course, in the interim, you know, I started and sold a major food company. So you're aware of that, right?
I'm not.
Are you kidding me? No.
No, tell me.
So in 2014, I started a food company called Primal Kitchen. Have you heard of it?
Oh, yeah, no, I knew that, but I didn't. You sold it?
Yeah. So I sold it almost 2.5 years ago. I sold it to Kraft Heinz. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Because I use the salad dressings.
There you go. Yeah. So anyway, so that's part of the other story that's happened in the ensuing, you know, 10 years since we last chatted. And, you know, part of the whole reason for creating this line of product was to have available to people things they could put on food to make it taste better, but would still encourage the body to burn fat and not rely on carbohydrates.
That's funny because it was when we're in the supermarket, we'll sometimes say, oh, hey, look, there's Mark's products and stuff. Yeah. But I had no idea you'd sold it. Wow. Yeah. Well, good for you.
Yeah. No, it was a great moment. And I'm still very much involved. I'm still the face of the brand and I'm still very much, you know, involved in creating new products and all the R&D and all of that stuff. So,
oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, look, I'm so glad you're still kicking ass, man. I mean, really, it couldn't happen to a better guy. So all the stuff we've been talking about, find it at tomwoods.com/1949. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, everybody, don't forget, school year starting. Some of you are thinking about, I just can't take this crazy system anymore. I'd like to try the old Ron Paul curriculum that old Woods talks about so much, that's self-taught and going to be great education for my kids. And I will keep my sanity because 90% of the work is just, it's video-based and it's easy. If you're thinking about doing that, you got to use my link to join, because if you don't, you don't get the $160 worth of bonuses, including I send you an autographed copy of one of my books and I have all kinds of extra goodies for you. But you got to use my link or you're not going to get those. So why wouldn't you use my link, right? What's my link? RonPaulHomeschool.com. So make sure you use that. And all right, that's it. Talk to you again soon, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.